Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Nati janang apanyasa ti. As each one of you knows very clearly, because I've said it many times, that the jhanas are so important to the practice here, just getting close to these things, understanding what they are, enjoying the beauty and the happiness of those states, and also gaining the wisdom which only those states can offer you, is such an important part of the monastic practice. However, that some of those states are quite difficult to obtain. Sometimes people strive very hard to try and attain those stages. But the first line of the famous Dhammapada verse, which I chanted at the very beginning, was that there is no jhanas for those without wisdom. Nati jhanang apanyasa. And it's a very powerful statement because it means that one of the pathways to attaining the deep meditations, to gaining samadhi, is the path of developing wisdom. It's not just a case of developing willpower. It's not just a case of keeping on going time after time. You can shorten that practice by developing the power of wisdom. And this evening's talk, I want to show how you can use wisdom to deepen your practice of meditation, how you can use wisdom to get greater happiness in your monastic life, and eventually how you can use that wisdom to even to get into the jhana states and empowering that wisdom through samadhi. As it says in the verses we say after the ordination, that panya, which is supported by samadhi, is mahapala, mahanisangsa. Has got great fruit and great benefit. So not only does panya lead to deep samadhi, and is a support of samadhi, is a cause for samadhi, but also that wisdom which is then empowered by samadhi becomes the cause for the enlightenment experiences to happen. So like using wisdom throughout the practice, you know, before samadhi, after samadhi, it's so important. Remember, just when we talk about, you know, these things we call jhanas, sometimes that it's nice to go back to the original Pali statements of what these things actually are. Those of you who have studied a bit of Pali, or you know the suttas, know that the first jhana is called Vivicca wa kammehi, vivicca akusalehi dhammehi. The word vivicca is a gerund. It means having abandoned, having separated yourself from, having aloof from, like putting these things a long distance away from you. That's what vivicca, having already put something a long way away. And what do you put a long way away? It's this thing in Pali called karma. It's usually defined as the five sense pleasures. I sort of like to make it wider than that, and I've got very good grounds for making it wider than that. Not just the five sense pleasures, but for the five sense sufferings as well. Anything to do with the five senses. Because the overcoming or the trying to get rid of the five sense sufferings, the unpleasantness of these five senses, is just, again, the search for pleasure. The maintaining of comfort and beauty and happiness in the realm of the five senses, again, it's just a searching for pleasure. Anything to do with that five sense world is one of the big obstacles, the major obstacles, to getting into deep meditation. And the other part of the prologue into the jhanas is vivicca akusalehi dhammehi. Having become separated from, having been a long way away from, unwholesome dhammas, and akusala dhammas. That especially means like the five hindrances. It especially means like craving for sensory objects. It means anything which is like unwholesome. First of all, because even the first jhana is separated from unwholesome dhammas, it shows that it must be a wholesome dhamma. The jhana is kusala dhamma. But first of all, the main part of what I wanted to talk about tonight is how you use that first part of the requirement to get into a jhana, or the requirement for any deep meditation, is to make yourself separated from this realm of the five senses. This realm of the five senses has two aspects to it, or two levels. There is the coarser level out there in the world of actually doing something, trying to find some comfort, some sense of happiness, security or whatever in that world of the five senses. And for most people that is the world. So much so that in one place the Buddha actually called, what is the world? What do we mean by loka? The world. The world of the five senses, the Buddha said. And even they call that karma loka, the five sense world. It's one of the three realms of existence. The other two being rupa loka and arupa loka, which mean the first four jhana realms, states of existence, and the immaterial jhana realms of existence. Those form the tiloka, the three realms of Buddhist cosmology. But in particular here we're talking about that first realm, which is what most people know, and a lot of other people, actually most people, have got no idea or conception of those other two worlds. But all they know is what they call this world, you know, the realm of the five senses. And it's to abandon that realm of the five senses is such an important part of the practice of meditation. But it's not only just getting out of that realm, it's also getting out of thinking about that realm. The karma vitakka, which is one of the other obstacles to deep meditation. So it's not only just leaving the realm of the five senses, leaving the world, but it's also leaving thinking about the world. It's the important part of the meditation. And if you can do that, if you can leave the world and leave thinking about the world, then of course the world disappears. The world only lasts because of your interest in it. It's only powerful because you give it the power. And that power is your interest. The longer that you live in this realm, if you have any degree of investigation, any degree of insight and understanding, you'll see this realm of the five senses promises everything but gives you only suffering. Now when you get born and this realm of the five senses seems so exciting, maybe a bit scary, but so exciting, full of all these pleasures. And it promises pleasures, it promises fulfillment, it promises satisfaction. You know, whether it's amassing toys, or whether it's watching videos, or whether it's playing with members of the opposite sex, it promises so much happiness, but it's in the realm of that five senses. You only need to sort of sit next to me when people come and tell me their marriage problems, or their sexual problems, or their relationship problems, or their health problems. You know, you should know that yourself. Well, that is a realm which promises happiness but only gives suffering. Whatever happiness it does give is just so momentary. Now that sensory happiness in the realm of the five senses is not just with physical touch, it's also with everything else, with sight, sound, smell, taste and physical touch. Now you take like sound. Now sometimes you'll listen to a marvellous talk, and sometimes you'll listen to a terrible talk. Why is it that we sort of always want sort of one type of talk and not the other type of talk? These are just talks, and it's happened just so often in my own personal experience. I've given a talk, And one person has come up and said, that was a really rotten talk, I was really upset about that. And someone else has said, that's one of the best talks I've ever heard, thank you very much. And I've sat here and thought, you know, what they're going on about, it's just an ordinary talk. So, you know, just all of these things, whether it's a talk or whether it's what you see, whether you see sort of something which is attractive to one person, is, you know, unattractive to someone else. That's why we have arguments about what colour to paint the walls, or whether we should put plants here. So many people have been coming to this monastery recently and just saying how beautiful the wattle trees are. You know, they're nice in bloom, and just, I haven't the monks, especially Ajahnyana, done such a wonderful job planting all these wattles, and I have to bite my lip and say, don't you know about hay fever? There's a rotten wattles there. I see all those flowers there, and I know what they're going to do to my nose. So, you know, one man's beautiful wattle tree is another man's cause of hay fever. So isn't that just the case of the search for beauty and perfection in this realm of the five senses? There was one time, which I always remember this story, Venerable Sariputta was abused. He was called his rotten names, sort of by this, I think it was a Brahmin. I think the Brahmin was just out there to test him. And he just really slagged off, as they say in Australia. Slagged off Venerable Sariputta. And Venerable Sariputta was an arahat. He understood about the five-sense world. He'd left it behind. And when they said, why didn't he get angry at what they said? That's really unfair. He has no right to say such things about you. He was lying, it was untrue. And all Venerable Sariputta would say, what do you expect? It's just sound. It's just one of the five senses. Sometimes the five-sense world is going to be very pleasing to you. Someone's going to say something to you and you just like it so much. Alas, they're really appreciating my true qualities. Alas, I'm being noticed in this monastery. Or sometimes, and someone just really, again, just call you a fool and an idiot. And you'll think, what right are they to say that? Who do they think they are? Sometimes it's okay if I say that, because I'm the abbot. But if it's just the Anagarika comes up to you and says, you know, you're just really sort of greedy for your sugar. Why are you always taking so much? Don't you know you take much more sugar than any monk in this whole monastery? What right have they got to say that? They should just do their job and just give me the sugar. But isn't this the case? If you were wise, you'd realize this is just sound. That's all. In the hearing, there is just the heard. It's just sound. So someone says, you're the best monk in the whole of Bodhinyana Monastery. It's just sound. Someone says, you're the stupidest monk. It's just sound, that's all. This is where that we understand just the nature of these five senses. You see someone beautiful, you look at them from the other direction, they look ugly. And it's, you know, what part of them do you like? You know, that I was just talking to someone at lunchtime, just as far as men and women are concerned, you know, when they're very young, they look the same. And then sort of at certain ages, in their middle years, they look different. And then when they get old, they look the same again. And it's only on the surface, whether it's a man or a woman, you can't distinguish between their feces. They all look the same. So as much of them is just still the same. So how can you sort of distinguish? It's just, sometimes we just get lost in the discrimination of the senses. If we understood that all the sights we have are just that much, they're just sights, they're part of the sensory world, and alongside beauty there has to be ugliness. Alongside ugliness there has to be beauty. Even a person who always lives amongst beauty, no matter how beautiful this monastery is, because you live in it all the time, you just cannot notice it. Sometimes people come here and they say, what a beautiful monastery it is. And I've got to sometimes pinch myself. What are they seeing? I'm not seeing. And the point is, because I live here all the time, so I've got nothing to compare it with. But when you go into town and see what it's like in town, and then you come back here, you can understand what they're saying. Every time I've come back from a weekend in town, when I come back here, the place does look beautiful. But after a few hours, a couple of days, it wears off, and I can't notice the beauty in this place. Same with ugliness. Some people, they marry an ugly girl, but after a while she starts to look beautiful. Because they've got nothing to compare it with. You see, this is all just the illusion of the senses. And this is all it is, isn't it? Just illusions. And it's the same with some of the things which you think about in your mind. This is the karma vitaka. In the mind, it's more dangerous than reality. Because in reality, it's quite clear what's going on. Because, you know, you can see, you can't avoid seeing the ugliness. You can't avoid seeing the sounds you just do not want to hear. In the real world, you can't avoid getting sort of food which you don't like. I had one of the curry puffs this morning. I thought, that looks really nice. But it was too hot for me. And so I sort of, I don't know, I might have got a very hot one. I must have put extra chili in the one I took. But it sort of really burnt my mouth. Ah, what a shame. It looked very nice on the outside. That's the trouble with these things. The silhouette, no matter, even if you choose your own food. I'm just really fed up myself about choosing my own food. I really actually look forward to retreat times when someone chooses the food for me. I don't know what it is, but when I choose the food, I always get things I don't like. When someone else chooses the food for me, actually it's much more delicious. It's really perverse. I think I'm just not clever enough. I look for things which I think are delicious, but they turn out not to be. But if you, the real world is like that, it's always disappointing. Even when you're in control, you can choose your own food. Do you actually really choose the best food of what's available there? Or would you, like I thought sometimes, after I've been down there once and tasted, let's go down again and have a second go at the food. Choose again. I made a mistake. Can I go down again, please? Especially sort of when you pass something, you think there's something else down the end of the tables and it's not there, or something it's not right, so you miss something at the beginning. But whatever, you just cannot get sort of the perfect meal. You cannot get sort of anything which is perfect in those senses. There's always something wrong with it. And that's part of the sensory world. But when you start thinking karma vitaka, thinking about that sensory world, the mind, it can play games with you. It can start imagining the most beautiful girl. It can start imagining the most delicious food. And when you start imagining, you never imagine the stomach aches afterwards from the food. You never imagine that when you're eating the most beautiful food, that sort of curries you don't like are poured on top of it. When you sort of imagine the most beautiful girl, you never imagine her farting or sort of doing other things which are just really, you know, obnoxious or arguing back at you. This is a problem with karma vitaka, with thoughts about sensuality. Because the mind is more in control of those things, it can make that world sort of unreal, unreally perfect, according to as you think it is. But something happens with karma vitaka. No matter just how much you start thinking about sensory world, you always have to try and find that in the real world. You find it's not quite the way it should be. And even with karma vitaka, it still leaves you with like a hunger, with a thirst for turning those thoughts into something more tangible and real. The point is that whatever you do in that realm, this is only the nature of happiness and then suffering, of the impermanence, the rise and fall of these things. That's the nature of karma loka. No matter where you are, in the lowest of slums or in the most opulent of palaces, you'd always have happiness and suffering. And just pretty much even degrees. The suffering of a king in the palace is a suffering which the peasant thinks doesn't exist. But kings, rulers, People who are great potentates, people who've got great power, they have their suffering. The poor people have their suffering. And sometimes even the kings look upon the poor people and think that if I could only be poor and have no worries, no responsibilities, no duties, I didn't have to make all these terrible decisions. And the person who's poor looks upon the king and thinks, if I only had all this food and all this women and all this luxury and wasn't cold at night. That's the nature of craving. It looks on other people and thinks that that's what I'd like to be, because there I shall be happy. When you're young, you want to be the abbot, the senior monk, so you can make all the decisions. And you can have the monastery just the way you want it. No more breakfasts in the morning when you're abbot. Or double breakfast in the morning when you're abbot. Or breakfast, brunch, and then lunch when you're abbot. Well, I thought that when I become abbot, I'll be in control. But then when you become abbot, you're not in control at all, because all these monks are saying, please don't do this, please don't do that. If you do that, I'm going to leave. If you can do this, I'll stay. And the lay people are on your back as well to do this and to do that. So you just, whatever you are, as one of the monks used to say in Thailand a long time ago, it wasn't Ajahn Chah, it was one of the other monks, I can't remember what. In any community, as in life, the senior monk has got senior monk suffering. Second monk has got second monk suffering. The middle monks have got middle monk suffering. Young monk have got young monk suffering. Novices have got novice suffering. Anagarika's got Anagarika suffering. Women staying here have got women staying here suffering. Cats have got cat suffering. They've all got suffering somewhere or other. You think the cats just have it so good. They don't need to come to the talks in the evening. They don't need to come for interviews. They don't need to do any work. They're not even on the roster to clean their toilets. But cats have cat suffering. Whatever realm in the five sense world is always a suffering, which is just measured by the gaps between your happiness. It doesn't matter how much happiness you have in that world, how perfect it is, it because of impermanence, anicca, if the degree of happiness just lowers a little bit, then that's suffering. When the suffering eases a little bit, that's called happiness. That's why that if you have physical pain, physical discomfort, you know it's not going to last, it gets worse, it gets better. When it gets better slightly, that's called happiness. You feel so much better because you feel so happy because it doesn't hurt quite so much today. And even when you're sort of very fit and healthy, because you've got a slight little ache or pain in the knees, and because it's not what you're used to, that's pain. Suffering and happiness are relative to each other. It's a great duality of Vedana. In the human being. That's why after a while of contemplating with wisdom, with panya, that you can never get a sight which is truly, permanently happy and satisfying. You never hear what you want to hear. You never smell what you want to smell. Even though we light incense, there are still monks who sort of pass wind. You can never taste what you want to taste. Even if we had a menu in this monastery, even if you didn't like the menu, you could ring up and get takeaway and the Buddhist Society would pay the bill. You'd still never get what you want to eat. You never get perfect tastes. And certainly physical touches. You never get sort of the perfect physical touch. Maybe for a moment you think you're almost there and then it's gone again. So why are you concerned with that realm? For the realm of the five senses. When you know it is futile. It is just like this, it's just got this much to it. You have coughs, you have backaches, knee aches, headaches, but sometimes you feel good. Sometimes it's cold, sometimes it's too hot. Sometimes it's just right, but not for very long. And you can't maintain this just rightness. So what are you going to do with this world? Are you going to carry on this life and the next life and the life afterwards, seeking for contentment and happiness in a realm which you should know through wisdom can never give you that? Are you going to continue on just fantasizing and thinking about that realm with karma vitakka, trying to construct the perfect utopias and dream worlds where everything is just right? It's a waste of time. The Buddha was saying there is something more than that. There is an escape from that realm of the five senses. You know the danger, you know the escape. What is that escape from that realm of the five senses? First of all, by knowing the futility of seeking happiness in that place. You let go of concern. If you are sick, you let go of concern. That's just the body. What do I expect? If someone says something you just don't like, what do I expect? That's just sound. You have a smell you don't like, you have to go down and turn over the compost. What do you expect? If you go and stay by the compost long enough, turn it over, then wherever you go afterwards, anything smells nice after turning the compost. See just how it's just all relative. And you taste food. If you go to northeast Thailand and start eating some of the disgusting things in northeast Thailand, then afterwards anything tastes nice, even just curry puffs which are too hot. You just give up all concern for that world. And physical touch, whether it's the touch of a woman, whether it's the touch of the heaters, whether it's the touch of the soft blankets on top of you at night time, you're never going to get happiness there. It's just a bit of happiness and then a bit of suffering. And there was one monk some time ago that he decided that he was so comfortable in bed in the mornings in the cold season in Thailand, underneath his blanket, which is so cozy there, he decided to see what would happen if he just didn't get out of bed that morning. It was very cozy, just, you know, when you first wake up in the morning at 4 o'clock or beforehand, whatever time you get up, under the nice blankets there. See how long you can stay under there. See if you can stay under there all day. You get sort of sick and tired of being under those blankets after a while. Just no matter how cozy they are, it doesn't last. There's no physical place where you could find comfort. So have that wisdom there, that all this searching for comfort, for pleasure in that five sense world, it is a waste of time. You'll never find it. Why the Buddha said, we're just chanting the middle way. Just make sure the body's got enough comfort to be healthy, but no more. Anything else, you just will never get full happiness in that realm. Try and make it as good as possible, but don't spend too much time on it. And then let go of concern for that world. People in the world outside spend all their life just seeking for happiness, making business in that world, building their houses, getting their cars, making their gardens, having their children, educating their children, worrying about their children, worrying about their finances, going off overseas, watching movies and videos, going to concerts, listening to music. It's all five sense world stuff. They spend their whole life doing that. What do they get? Do they get really any pleasure and happiness? All they get is an old people's home or a coffin. Get old age sickness and death. That's all you get out of that realm. It gets worse and worse and worse. See the dangers in following that realm. See the escape, which is saying, I'm not going to be concerned with that realm. That lack of concern for that realm, that lack of interest, is the cause for the mind turning away. It's only because we're interested in the sensory realm, because we're under the delusion that that can give us something valuable, that we keep playing around there. The lack of interest in the beautiful simile, which I love repeating from the suttas, is like taking the stick out of the water. Just in the simile of the fire sticks. When you just stop playing around in that wet, soppy, five-sense world, you take it out, you've got a chance to dry out. It takes a while to dry out, but the drying out in the simile of the fire sticks is where the sap, the wetness inside the stick, because it's been soaking in the water for such a long time, when it's taken out, the outside dries off very quickly, but the inside takes a while to dry out. That inside is the karma vitakka, just the thoughts about the sensory world. The longer you stay as a monk, just quite naturally, just you dry out more and more. And the thoughts about the sensory realm just start to disappear, and they just go. Why bother about that sensory realm? You have enough Dhamma taught to you, you read the suttas, and you experience people. It's one of the nice things about being a monk, people come and tell you their problems. So your conditioning from the lay people is just, they never come and tell you about all the wonderful things going on in their family. Only come and tell you about the problems. So it's very advantageous. You see the bad side of family life. You see the bad side of health. You know, you don't go visiting people who are healthy, you go visiting people who are sick. You don't visit people when they're born, you visit people when they die. So it's very beneficial to see that part of life as a monk, because it just dries out the karma vitakka. You'd have no illusions about what this realm is all about. Drying out can be hastened. It's hastened by putting the wood in the fire, or putting it in the sun. Putting it in the fire is practicing this meditation to dry out the karma vitakka. Putting it in the sun is listening to Dhamma, allowing the Dhamma to dry you out. What it is, what you're really drying out, is you're drying out your belief in this world, which creates all those thoughts. You're drying out this sort of arguing with the five-sense world. Why do you look that way? Why do you say that? Why can't you say this? Why do I feel this way? I want to feel that way. Stop arguing with that world. I want the food to taste this way, not that way. Why didn't you put more salt in? Why do you put less salt in? Why can't we have more onions or whatever else which you like? Stop arguing with that world. Stop thinking about it. In the seen, let there just be the seen. In the heard, just the heard. In the smelt, just the smelt. The taste, just the taste. In the body sensations, let it just be the bodily sensations. That's all. Let those five senses alone. It's just sensory activity, that's all. It's impermanent, it rises and falls. It's very easy to see the rise and fall of the senses. Every time you're happy with the five senses, when you look at the monastery, it looks so beautiful, the sky is blue, the sun is shining, the birds are singing, the kangaroos are hopping around. Everything's so beautiful. How long is that going to last? Until it starts raining. Until sort of the crows start coming and making a noise. It doesn't last that long, so don't buy into that. And sounds, when you know, you hear things you really like to hear, and you feel on top of the world, that doesn't last. And the feelings in the body, you feel healthy, you're full of energy. Sooner or later you're going to get up in the morning and feel rotten. You've got a cold or you feel sick or whatever. So don't buy into that realm. That's not where you're going to find liberation. Instead, you let go of that realm. Letting go begins by taking away interest. It is deepened by seeing there's no value in that world. What you're disinterested in, what you see there's no value in, then you get even revolted by that world, nibbida. You just don't want anything to do with that realm. No, with no boys and girls, that's teenager stuff. You know, with videos, and that's just stupid stuff. You know, with praise and blame, that's just loka dhamma. Leave that for, you know, pop stars and politicians who like praise and blame, or praise and not blame. That's all what happens in a family, just praising and blaming and blaming and praising. That's just part of the world. It's not nothing which you're going to find any value in. So when you see those things happening in your life, especially when you see those things echoing in your mind, as karma vitaka, notice them with mindfulness. With wisdom, know that this is a futile area. It's not going to lead to anything. Take away the value with those types of thoughts. And if you really are disinterested, take away the value, are revolted by those thoughts, because that they've caused you so much suffering, then they will end by themselves. You can't say, right, I am going to get rid of those thoughts, I am going to let go of those thoughts. That's coming from ego, from self, from I. That never works. That just makes you frustrated. Why can't I do this? That's called frustration. Because you got this I involved in it. That's why the Buddha taught anatta. If you try and do it, just through your willpower, through your doing, you just get more suffering. So instead of like doing it in a stupid way, use panya, use wisdom. If you want to let go, this is how it's done. See it for what it is, yathābhūta, yānadasana, seeing things as they really are, remembering them as they really are, with the mindfulness, not just seeing it once, but keeping that in mind. This is a waste of time, this is futile. Taking away the value, whenever this comes up, this is hopeless, I'm not going to get into this, it's just wasting my time. I've got more valuable things to do than listen to this five-sense world. And then when you take away the value, when you have disinterested, when even revolted by these things, they do not come into your mind with such force. In fact, when they do come into your mind, the mind kicks them out. Not you kick them out, the mind kicks them out. You are reconditioning your mind. You're putting the stick in the sun of the Dhamma. You're doing the baking it with the Dhamma, with the meditation, with the insights, remembering what's happening. And as you take the importance away from that five-sense world, it doesn't bother you so much. You find that you are happier just being by yourself in the hut. You're happier in the present moment. You're happier in silence. These things come up naturally, all by themselves, without you willing them to occur. They come up because when you are vivicchehi kamehi, when you are aloof from the five-sense world, this is just what happens. When the stick dries out, it just takes a fire. And just takes a little bit of rubbing, just watch the breath, and everything just comes. Whether it's beautiful breath, nimittas, jhanas, the works, they come because that which has stopped it, the sap, the moisture, the wetness, the sogginess of the five-sense world has been removed. For monastics, that is the biggest part. As far as the unwholesome dhammas are concerned, the first one, kamachanda, vyapada, they're all to do with the five-sense world. Even sort of restlessness and remorse, kukucha, and sorry, udicca kukucha, That's all again to do with the five sense world. So most of the five hindrances can be smashed to bits through this method of just not giving a hoot about the five sense world. And as you do this, you find that the danger of the five senses, the biggest danger, is not just that they give you suffering. You also have the second danger, is they stop you experiencing the liberations. They stop you experiencing the peace of the other realms. Because as soon as you have like gaps in these five sense clouds which obscure the jitta, as soon as you have gaps there and you start seeing the jitta, it's piti sukha, it's happiness, it's bliss, it's wonderful sense of ease, both in body and mind. You realize that this five sense world, which people have been rushing around chasing after its goodies, not only does it give you suffering, but it also stops you experiencing the happinesses, the beautiful happinesses, the peace and the ease, and the insights which come from that. So there's the two dangers. One, it gives you suffering. One, it stops you experiencing the happiness. And once you start getting into these beautiful, peaceful states of mind, once you get your first taste of it, it's a reconditioning of the mind. The mind is seeing something better, something it never expected, and that becomes a powerful conditioning. A powerful conditioning not of turning away from the world because you know it's futile, but turning away from the world because you know there's something better, that the real goodies lie elsewhere. The real insights, the real happiness, the real fun stuff can never be found in the realm of bank accounts and videos and concerts and amazing cruises in the South Sea Isles. The real goodies come from leaving all that behind and sitting in a simple hut during a rains retreat, just watching the breath and watching everything disappear. Why does it disappear? Because you have no interest in it. No interest in the body. No interest in what you see. No interest in what you hear. Monks come up and call you stupid, they call you great, they call you a lazy slob of a meditator, they call you the greatest meditator in the whole monastery. It just goes in one ear out the other. It's just sound. It's just heat, just cold. It's just, see the most beautiful, attractive woman come in the monastery, it's just sight, that's all. The ugliest old hag come in the monastery, it's just sight, that's all. Whatever comes, the most beautiful food or the distasteful food, what do I expect? It's just food, that's all. When you get to that sort of stage, meditation becomes easy, becomes natural. Just go back to your hut and there's no echoes. There's no lingering of what you've experienced in the Dhanasala. There's no echoes of what someone has said to you. Just they say it and it's gone. There's nothing left. There's nothing to think about. There's nothing to plan. There's nothing to remember. The present moment is all you have. And you just, nothing else you can do. And just the silence. There's nothing to think about. The world of the five senses, it just doesn't give you any interest anymore. You've got some viveka from that world. You can give physical viveka. You can build a hut with an ensuite and a heater and a walking meditation path in the middle of the desert and drop food by helicopter in every day with an anagarika on the end of the rope to offer it to you in Hatapasa. But it still wouldn't give you jhanas or make you enlightened because you're not aloof from the five senses. You carry them there with you. Or you can be in a hut close to the hall and people coming past you and noise of bulldozers going past. If you are aloof from the five senses, if you know how to let go of them, then it won't worry you. Let go of that world, the five sense realm. Be aloof from it. finds that quietness within, once you're aloof from that realm, from that world, the jhanas will come up all by themselves. It's one thing to say, okay, this is the method, present moment awareness, silence, watch the breath, full awareness of the breath, beautiful breath, then you get nimittas coming up, then go into the nimitta. Don't forget the insight, the wisdom practices. Realm of the five senses. See them for what they are. Let go of them. Dry out. If you want the fast way, dry out by putting them under the sun of the Dhamma. Use all of the Dhammas you know. Use your insight, your intelligence. And you'll find it's not that hard. And you go back and you get the beautiful joys. And then you get the really fun stuff coming up. Once you get into samadhi and all these insights coming up, not only does it give you great happiness and joy, because you're walking in the footsteps of the Buddha. First jhana is the first footstep of the Buddha. Once you start really seeing impermanence and non-self and the Four Noble Truths, you realize that this Dhamma which the Buddha taught is perfect Dhamma. It's amazing, it's true, and you're experiencing it. And you do know there are stream winners in the world, there are arahats in the world, because you become one of them. And then you sort of can go out into that realm and you can teach people, not just teach people from theory, not teach people because you have to teach people, because someone tells you to go and give a talk. You teach people because you're an Arya. It's what you do. And you know you're sort of, you're following in the footsteps of a Buddha. You're following the footsteps of the Arahats. You're following the footsteps of the Aryas. You're following the footsteps of the Kuba Ajahns. And it gives you inspiration and joy. And you're giving something to the world. Something really worthwhile. So all this is really in front of you. It will happen. It's there for the taking. If you really want to be happy, this is the way to go. So use your wisdom with this five sense will. Don't go messing around with this realm. You never find happiness there. Some is, if you like this evening's talk, sort of be careful. If you hate this evening's talk, be careful. It's just sound, that's all. Just let go of that realm. If you're aching in your knees, just let go. It's just knees, that's all. What do you expect having a body? It's going to be painful. Then when you're going to get back to your height, you feel, oh, this is really good. You're going to stretch out your legs, you feel so nice. You're cold, then you get hot, then you get cold, you get in between, but that doesn't last very long. When are you going to let go of that realm? Don't give it too much attention. Don't give it too much importance. And then you have all these wonderful prizes just lined up there waiting for you. So this is a talk about using wisdom. Nati jhanang apanyasa. There is no jhanas for those without wisdom. This is the wisdom you should have, to see the adinawa, the dangers in the five sense world, see how it arises, and see how it passes away, see its escape, its nisarana from the five sense world. You can see all those things, you've got that wisdom, and then the meditation becomes easy, monastic life becomes fun, you can become a great teacher, and you can be a great blessing to the world. And the world needs a lot of great blessings. So that's the talk for this evening. May you be a great blessing to the world.
Sukhati Thano,